Well, thank you, Pastor Greg and the team. That was some great worship there, and it's just wonderful to gather together, to be filled up like we do each Sunday, and it's just, I love you, church. I was away for a couple days on prayer retreat earlier this week, and God just gave me a greater love for our church and our future and where God's going to take us as we move forward. So great to have you here this morning, whether it's your first time here, and I met a couple first-timers this morning, or whether you've been coming many, many years. So great to have you. Hang out afterwards in the foyer. Particularly if you're a guy, you know, there's dad's root beer. You don't have to be a father. Just, you know, any guy age 12 and up, let's say, grab a dad's root beer, and let's chillax together for a couple minutes in the foyer. So good to have you here as we talk about another difficult subject this morning on the journey of mental health. As we talk about the journey of depression. The World Health Organization has named depression the second most common cause of disability worldwide after cardiovascular disease, and they're expected it to become number one by 2019. Of Canadians, 5 to 10% of Canadian adults are currently experiencing the symptoms of major depression, and up to 25% will meet that diagnostic criteria sometime during our lifetime. Antidepressants have soared nearly 400% since 1988. It's the most frequently used medication among 18 to 44-year-olds. You say, well, Rick, what about Christians? What about church-going people? There's no evidence that the frequency of depression is any different among Orthodox Jews and evangelical Christians, among Catholics and Protestants, among churchgoers and non-churchgoers. Non-Christians get depressed. Christians get depressed. And so let's say we have 300 adults here this morning. It means 15 to 30 of us this morning here have major depression in our lives. 75 of us will sometime in the course of our lifetime experience major depression. Dozens and dozens of us here this morning are taking antidepressants. But we journey together. And I fear it may even get worse, the stats, in the future. In fact, they say a teenager today is 10 times as likely to get depressed as 50 years ago. So put that in context, a teenager here this morning is 10 times more likely to be depressed than his or her grandfather or grandmother was. And we see that in popular culture with what's happening. The most popular Netflix TV series ever is this one. Why don't we put it on the screen? 13 Reasons Why. Who's heard about it? 13 Reasons Why. It's the most tweeted TV series of any series in 2017. And 13 Reasons Why is about this late high school student, Hannah Baker, who takes her own life, and it follows her friend, Clay Jensen, and she's left behind these 13 tapes, which is kind of 13 reasons. And I don't want to talk too much about the series, and I'm certainly not endorsing the series. And to be honest, I haven't watched the series, so it's always dangerous to talk about something you haven't seen, right? And I realize, you know, there's Canadian high schools that have banned the teenagers from talking about this series in the hallways, which is kind of an interesting thing. I don't know how you enforce that. In New Zealand, it's illegal for teenagers to watch it without an adult present. Now, some members of my family, like my daughter, has watched the series. And I asked her, does it endorse, and that's part of the fear, does it endorse or does it trigger suicide, you know, when you watch something like this? And so that's why I'm saying I'm not at all endorsing the show. In fact, I don't even know if I could watch it. It's just so graphic. It breaks my heart to see somebody take their own life. And I've known too many people who have done that. Now, I'm assuming the producer, Selena Gomez, that, you know, her intentions are good and that she wants to help prevent teen suicide. But it's obviously touching a raw nerve that so many people are talking about this show. In fact, where my daughter goes to high school, Sullivan High School, she tells me that there's going to be some sort of a parent group around watching this series and talking about it. It speaks of the day and the age we live in. So wherever you are, whatever your age, whatever your journey, we journey together. You are not alone. Let me give you two facts about depression. Number one is that depression is a universal problem. Everybody say universal. Universal. It's no respecter of persons, right? It doesn't matter in the culture, the background, the class of people. It can affect anyone and everyone. Sure, there may be certain factors that set us up for depression, as in certain personality types. If we tend to be more melancholy, if we have more money, we tend to be more depressed than people who have less money. If we're more analytical in the way we perceive the world, certain factors like that. But given the right stressors, any of us can become depressed. And since it's Father's Day, let me talk to the guys. Guys, depression is not a woman's issue. Some guys tend to perceive it that way. It affects both genders. Again, to varying degrees, it could be acute depression, which is short-lived, you know, to chronic depression, which can last through someone's lifetime. It could be, you know, the blues, you know, which we all experience, to major depression requiring hospitalization. It can have its basis in biology, when there's something wrong with the serotonin levels in our brain. Or it could be psychological, in the sense of all of us experience kind of what's called reactive depression, where we kind of react to the circumstances, the pain, the brokenness in life, and we get depressed as a result of it. I'm saying depression affects us all. So let's stop blaming ourselves when we are depressed. Depression is not a sign of spiritual failure. I can't say that strong enough. That depression is not a sign of spiritual failure. You could be here this morning and you could be suffering, let's say, excessive fatigue. You could be having too much guilt in your life. You could be having these feelings of worthlessness. You can be full of self-reproach. You can be unable to make a decision. You could even be suicidal. And yet you're still a Christian. You can still be a godly man or woman. There's all kinds of triggers that cause depression. Stress, like I mentioned, plays huge havoc with the brain's neurotransmitters. Stress exhausts our supply of adrenaline, depletes our ability to cope with life. Stress is a huge cause of depression. Addiction can be another cause. And it's almost circular, right? We're depressed, and so we turn to an addiction to kind of soothe it. But then the addiction kind of fuels the depression, and we go around this vicious cycle. Midlife. Guys. That can cause depression, right? And there's all kinds of reasons around that. But, you know, let's just call it manopause, you know. We go through, that's bad, eh? Been hanging out with Chris too much. Midlife. All kinds of things happen in midlife, guys. Stress around jobs. Stress around marriage. Stress around kids or kids leaving home. Aging parents. I've seen in many men spiritual issues, where the hope and the idealism of the 20s suddenly gets dissipated. And suddenly they find themselves questioning everything. Questioning faith. All kinds of things. Remember a couple of years ago, for me, it was around questions of purpose. After I turned 40, and I said, what's my reason for being here? Like, if I were to fall off the edge of the earth, like, what kind of ripple have I left behind? And I was asking myself these kind of questions around, does my life count? And I wondered about it. Maybe some of you guys can relate. And men, why don't we talk about something else? Maybe ladies, if you want to just kind of put your ears, put your fingers in your ears, and maybe we'll just turn this into a guy's locker room for a second. Guys, let's talk about below the belt and depression. It's very real, but as guys, we never talk about it. We're embarrassed and ashamed. And let's face it, we all know that testosterone, you know, falls off sometimes very rapidly for guys after age 35. And too many of us as men have kind of identified our maleness with what's below the belt. And we've got to adopt a more mature approach. Your manhood is more than just your sexual prowess. And I say that because men can so easily get depressed in this area. Men can so easily make stupid mistakes in this area when they feel they've got to prove something or kind of prove their manhood, prove their sexuality, and their sexuality, they define it to such a narrow thing. And so what I'm saying is depression affects us all in so many, many different ways. Women, thanks for plugging your ears and not listening. I could say a lot more, but some of you didn't plug your ears. Depression is a universal problem. It's also an ancient problem. When we're talking about depression, we can talk back to, let's say, Adam and Eve's son, and perhaps that he was depressed. We see many godly people in the Bible as being depressed. Like I said, depression is not a sign of spiritual failure. A couple of verses I put on your outline there. 1 Kings 19, talking about Elijah. While he himself went on a day's journey into the wilderness, he came to a broom bush, sat down under it, and prayed that he might die. "I have had enough, Lord," he said. "Take my life. I am no better than my ancestors." There's a guy who's depressed, right? Listen to his language. This is Elijah. This is this hero of the faith. This is the guy who has just had the showdown with these prophets of Baal, these false prophets. God has sent fire down from heaven. It's been this huge, amazing spiritual victory, and now he's suicidal. What's up with that? Well, today we would call that post-adrenaline depression. And sometimes we get this adrenaline rush. We live in that adrenaline rush, and then, boom, we cave after that. Sometimes that's how I'm kind of feeling on Monday mornings. Like, oh man, this post-adrenaline crash. Some of you in your work, you understand that. Kind of Monday to Friday, you're going. You go hard through life. And then Saturday comes along and crash. That's why some people I've known, they've got to go back to the office Saturday afternoon. Why? They've got to shoot up again on this adrenaline rush, the project they're working on, the sales goals they're trying to meet, whatever it may be. They've got to shoot up on that adrenaline rush in order to keep them going. And here we have Elijah. His depression. Or the Psalms are full of it. Psalm 42, "My tears have been my food day and night, while people say to me all day long, 'Where is your God? Why, my soul, are you downcast? Why so disturbed within me?'" Some of us can relate to that, that our tears have been our food. Some of us, when we're depressed, we can't eat. If you're like me, it's the opposite. You can't stop eating. Like, give me the junk food. You know, I want to kind of self-medicate this discouragement. Or Jonah 4, verse 3, "Now, Lord, take away my life. It's better for me to die than to live." Here's again this prophet that was called by God to preach to Nineveh, and that's his attitude. Jeremiah is perhaps the most depressed of the Old Testament prophets. God almost could nickname him a weeping prophet. Put some verses on your outline. Jeremiah 20. "Cursed be the day I was born. May the day my mother bore me not be blessed. Why did I ever come out of the womb to see trouble and sorrow and to end my days in shame?" Wow, that's a guy who's depressed. And I was going to talk about Jeremiah this morning. But then one grace pointer, Arnold Ballantyne, he phoned me and he said, "Can I read Psalm 88? I said, Psalm 88. He said, yeah, it's my favorite psalm. And I said, let's do it on Father's Day, and I'll switch up. I'll talk about Psalm 88. So Arnold, why don't you you read for us Psalm 88. Want to grab the mic there? No? Okay. Let's listen.
Well, first of all, I just wanted to say if David were depressed, if there were Prozac, I don't think he would have ever written the Psalms. So Psalm 88, for the choir director, the psalm of the descendants of Korah, a song to be sung to the tune, the suffering of affliction, a psalm of Herman the Ezrahite. O Lord, God of my salvation, I cry out to you by day. I come to you at night. Now hear my prayer. Listen to my cry. For my life is full of troubles, and death draws near. I am as good as dead, like a strong man with no strength left. They have left me among the dead, and I lie like a corpse in a grave. I am forgotten, cut off from your care. You have thrown me into the lowest pit, into darkest depths. Your anger weighs me down. With wave after wave, you have engulfed me. Salah. You have driven my friends away by making me repulsive to them. I am in a trap with no way of escape. My eyes are blinded by my tears. Each day I beg for your help, O Lord. I lift up my hands to you for mercy. Are your wonderful deeds of any use to the dead? Did the dead rise up and praise you? Can those in the grave declare your unfailing love? Can they proclaim your faithfulness in the place of destruction? Can the darkness speak of your wonderful deeds? Can anyone in the land of forgetfulness talk about your righteousness? O Lord, I cry out to you. I will keep on pleading day by day. O Lord, why do you reject me? Why do you turn your face from me? I have been sick and close to death since my youth. I stand helpless and desperate before your terrors. Your first fierce anger has overwhelmed me. Your terrors have paralyzed me. They swirl around me like floodwaters all day long. They have engulfed me completely. You have taken away my companions and loved ones. Darkness.
Thank you, Arnold. This is a scripture that's not generally read in church. As you can see why. In fact, Walter Brueggemann, the Old Testament scholar, says Psalm 88 may be an embarrassment to conventional faith. And he asks, why is it even in the Bible? Now, Psalm 88 is an individual lament. We've got about a third of the Psalms that would be laments. But what sets Psalm 88 apart is that every other Psalm, every other lament, there's always a turning. There may be some, like this one has a song of sorrow, a song of sadness, but every other Psalm, it turns. And then there's hope. This is this idea that God is my light, or God is my refuge, God is my strength, etc., etc. All of the Psalms except Psalm 88. It starts with prayer, and then in Hebrew, the very last word is darkness, and it ends in darkness. There is no happy ending to this psalm. So why is it in the Psalter? I was wondering about it this week if the reason being is perhaps Psalm 88 gives language to our raw emotions, to the wrenching sorrow, the raw prayer, the agony, the defeat, the fear that all of us feel within us. Some of us quite regularly. We see in Psalm 88, the psalmist, Heman, which we really don't know much about him, other than he was a worship director. But he starts out crying out to God. And the word there that's used for crying is a loud divine, loud cry for divine help. It's a recognition that he's got to turn to God. But like I said, it tends to get worse after that. And the next paragraph, verses 3 to 5, is he's almost kind of like he's alive, but he's dead. He references kind of going down to the pit. He compares himself to this unknown soldier who's in a mass grave. He says, I am one without strength. But he's almost like a shadow of a man. And that God is absent. The next paragraph, verses 6 to 9 there, not only is God absent, but now he gets accusatory towards God, right? Where he starts blaming God. He says, you have put me in the lowest pit. Your wrath lies heavily on me. You have overwhelmed me with your waves. You've taken my closest friends. You. Heman's in this pit, overwhelmed by these waves. But in some ways, he senses and feels that God has been unjust to him, including taking away his closest friends. Like I said, we don't know the background of Heman. We don't know what he's going through here. You know, as I read it and reread it this week, and, you know, there's speculation that he's got leprosy, but we don't know that. It doesn't say that in there. Maybe he does have some sort of physical illness. Maybe he's suffered a long time. Maybe he has mental illness. Maybe he's lost a loved one. Or maybe he's near death. We don't know. But perhaps God keeps it generic like that for us so that all of us can identify at some point, some place with Heman's journey. And he gives God his questions in the next paragraph, verse 10. Do your wonders show to the dead? Do their spirits rise up and praise you? Is your love declared in the grave, your faithfulness in the faithfulness in destruction? Are your wonders known in the place of darkness, or are your righteous deeds in the land of oblivion? He's asking question after question to God. But God seems to him absent with his last question there. Why, Lord, do you reject me and hide your face from me? Some of us know that feeling where we feel disconnected from God. And the aloneness when we're feeling that way can be terrifying. Twice he mentions here in the psalm about being alone. Perhaps you can relate to this depressed psalmist. Depression is the common cold of mental illness, someone has said. It's so prevalent among us. And when we're depressed, we find ourselves like this psalm in this state. The state where nothing is right and we're not right. We make devaluing statements about ourselves, our circumstances, our future. We say things like, I'm no good, I can't do anything right, my life sucks, everything is bad, and my future's hopeless. And we kind of awfulize this bad future. Well, what do you say? What do you say when somebody like Heman is part of your discipleship group? What do you say when somebody like him is part of your family? What about when you're experiencing those feelings? We want to walk as a community with one another and walk well. Parker Palmer, in one of his books, describes his depression, where in his 40s, twice he found himself, you know, unable to kind of cope with life's demands. And here's a guy who's written books, university professor, I believe he's a president of a university, and all these accolades, and yet he couldn't get out of bed. And he describes how sometimes people would come and see him, and they'd try to cheer him up, and they'd say, oh, Parker, the weather's nice outside. Why don't you go outside for a walk and enjoy the sunshine? But when you're depressed, that just makes you feel worse. Because now you're thinking, oh, I should be getting out of the bed. I can't get out of the bed. And you feel more guilty than you felt before. Or people would say things like, oh, Parker, you're so gifted. Look at your writing and your speaking. Look what you've done. But then it's again, oh, I'm supposed to be this good person. And But now I'm really feeling like this bad person and this disconnection. Or sometimes people said, I know exactly how you're feeling. And then they tell their own story. But haven't you noticed that each of us have individual journeys with God? And we can't really compare our stories. God has to meet each of us where we're at in our own journey. I remember my reactive depression in my early 40s. And like I said, with questions around purpose and meaning. And I remember one evening, I was finishing up at a wedding reception that I had officiated at that day. And this guy comes up to me who knew me well, and he said, Rick, something wrong. Something wrong with you. You got everything going for you. You got a great church. You got a great job. You got a great life. You got a great wife. You got great kids. You own a house, yada, yada, yada. And he went down the list. And he said, and you're not happy? But again, that just caused me to feel even more guilty than I was feeling. So why is Psalm 88 in the Bible? Why would God have this scripture passage that's so full of darkness here in his book? Well, I see a theme that runs through. Verse 1, Lord, you are the God who saves me. Day and night I cry out to you. Verse 9, I call to you, Lord, every day I spread my hands to you. Verse 13, but I cry to you for help, Lord. In the morning my prayer comes before you. That this man, in the midst of his darkness, was crying out to God. Attempting to reach up to God. And I wonder if that's the encouragement from this psalm for us. Somebody read the psalm yesterday and emailed me and said, Rick, I hope there's some good news you'll have for us in the midst of this. It's tough to find good news here in Psalm 88. But I see a guy who persevered. I see a guy who didn't give up. Maybe he didn't feel like God was there. He made some accusations against God, but God's got broad shoulders, right? He can handle our complaints and laments. He can handle all the things that we worry about and wonder about and question what he's doing. He could have thrown in the towel, but he continued to reach out to God. God is big enough to handle our depressive thoughts. Sometimes the brokenness in our world just causes me anguish, particularly the unfairness of life. And I can get depressed around that. And I wonder, even in this topic of depression, as I was thinking about it this week, I thought, why do some people in their journey kind of turn the corner and they seem to do all right? And then other people, it just seems to get worse and worse. And I've known too many people who have taken their own lives. And why is that, God? When we feel alone, we feel this weight of darkness. God is there, even when we don't feel him. And so, like Heman, perhaps we persist, we plod on, we persevere, and God will make a way. Friends, it's often darkest right before dawn. And dawn will break through for you. As the author of Hebrews writes, I put in your outline, we have this hope as an anchor for our soul, firm and secure. And so, church, let's hang on to hope, because we can each have hope. Let's be open with one another about our mental languishing. I put a quote on there from Kay Warren. She writes, the truest friends and helpers are those who wait for the griever to emerge from the darkness that swallowed them alive without growing afraid, anxious, or impatient. They don't pressure their friend to be the old familiar person that they're used to. They're willing to accept that things are different, embrace the now scarred one they love, and are confident that their compassionate, non-demanding presence is the surest expression of God's mercy to their suffering friend. They're okay with messy and slow and few with answers, and they never say, move on. Kay Warren wrote those words after her and her husband, Rick Warren, who wrote The Purpose-Driven Life, after their 27-year-old son took his own life. Church, may we be those kind of people. I was thinking this week of the two guys on the road to Emmaus. They're walking from Jerusalem to Emmaus, 7 miles, and then Jesus comes in their midst, but he kind of disguises them. We don't know how, but somehow Jesus, you know, disguises himself, and he's kind of walking with them, and he says, hey, what's up, guys? And they're like, what's up? Haven't you heard? And he's like, heard what? He's like, haven't you heard what happened in Jerusalem? And he's like, what? He's like, this guy, Jesus, the one we had put our hope in, the one who we thought was going to redeem Israel, they've crucified him. And so Jesus kind of interacts with them on that and listens to their lament and their pain. They reach Emmaus, they reach their home, and Jesus is like, oh, I'm going to keep going. They're like, no, it's getting dark out. Why don't you come in, you know, have a meal, spend the night. And Jesus is like, no, I'll keep going. They're like, no, you got to come in. So he comes in, they sit down, they have a meal. Jesus breaks the bread. When he breaks the bread, suddenly they recognize who it is. It's like, you're Jesus. And then he disappears. And I wonder, friends, as a church family, as a community, do we journey with one another, just walk with one another? As Luke writes about those guys, that they are downcast. That when we find one another being downcast, we just covenant to walk with one another in that journey and to listen. And to break bread together. Say, I'm here with you. I'm here for you. And Jesus, in his time, will make himself visible. Will show himself to the person we journey with. And if you're that person this morning, let me remind you that God is for you. The cross reminds us that God is for you. He won't leave you. You might feel like you've left God. You might feel that God has abandoned you. But the cross reminds us without a doubt that God hasn't abandoned you. That God will walk with you, even when it feels like a Psalm 88 season in your life. Let me pray. Sorry, I just need a second here to. Oh God, we've waded into a heavy topic this morning. And I feel the heaviness even because some of us, that's our journey here and now. You brought us here. And thank you that you first and foremost love us. God, I just pray that for some of us here this morning that aren't experiencing that, aren't feeling that, that you would speak right now into hearts and to minds and to souls. You are, Jesus, the lifter of the head. You care about the broken and the downtrodden, the weary and the burdened. Thank you that we can have hope in and through you. Thank you that you have each of us on a journey. Thank you for the healing work you're doing in our individual lives, in our community here. Amen.